Hello everyone, welcome along. Alice Worsley with you for the next 25 minutes here on Planet FM, and I have a very special guest who happens to be an old friend. Well, she's a young friend, really. She's not old, but she's old in terms of I've known her for some time. And her name is Jackie Fridge, and some of you may know Jackie, particularly if you've seen the occasional clip on Burke's Backyard on Prime, or, of course, you get the Australian Women's Weekly, because are you still doing the gardening?
I'm still the columnist for that, yes.
That's right, the columnist for the Australian Women's Weekly, the gardening section. Or you may have read one of her, how many books now, Jackie?
120, which does make me seem very elderly.
120 books. When was the first book?
1991, I think, or 92, somewhere around there.
So in 12 years approximately, you have written 10 books a year, if you look at it like that.
Some of them are very short books.
You would be one of the most prolific authors I think I've met. That's amazing.
It's really embarrassing, actually.
But you are a prolific writer, but you're such an enthusiastic writer. Now, for people who don't know what you write about, this is the other lovely thing about you, is you're not just one thing, are you? What kinds of things do you write?
Well, I write about gardening. I write about pest control. I write about weed control. I have written a book about chooks. I have written a book about building houses and power systems, because they're all things that we do.
Yes.
A lot of kids' books for all ages, starting with the picture books and then going right through to a sci-fi trilogy for teenagers. A novel for adults. I suppose I could keep going.
I suppose you could. But, that's already, we're up to close to 100 already. That's amazing because, of course, the key thing we want to talk about today is your one of your books you're here to promote called Rocket Your Child Into Reading, because for you, you have dyslexia, and that is incredible that someone who has dyslexia has been able to achieve what you have, or is it?
In a funny way, I don't think I could have done it if I wasn't dyslexic. With my form of dyslexia, now look, I find it really hard to focus on a single word.
Yeah.
I have to do things quickly or not at all.
Right.
So I read in chunks very quickly, I write very quickly, I speak very quickly, and I have to remember to keep going down, and not babble like this, because if I speak normally, no one can understand what I'm saying. So I have to remember to slow down when I talk. But... yes, so for me, dyslexia has been a real disadvantage, particularly when I was at school, sort of daydreamer, messy, etc., the cane on the fingers, because I still cane kids in those days.
Yes.
But on the other hand, I really don't think I could have written the number of books. In fact, I'm sure I couldn't have.
If
I wasn't dyslexic. And that, of course, dyslexia is just a catchphrase.
Yeah, what exactly is it? How would you describe it?
For kids who actually have learning difficulties, and one of the great tragedies is that often kids who have learning difficulties are lumped together with kids who are just slow at learning things. And the kids who have difficulties, there can be so many different reasons, and they really need diagnosing. For example, with a kid with my learning difficulty, trying to teach them to read by actually pointing at the words as you go across the page.
Yeah.
In fact, even to think about that literally makes me feel nauseous and I shut my eyes. It's so disorientating. With a kid with my learning problems, they're far better off learning them to actually write, teaching them to write touch type with a computer, and counterintuitively they learn to read that way and they can read in chunks rather than breaking up into phonetics.
Which doesn't work for someone like you.
Whereas with other kids, yes, exactly what they need is actually breaking the words up. There are different ways. If a kid, for example, had a bad toothache, you'd never expect the teacher to correct it. They'd be taken to a specialist to fix the tooth. Then you teach them to read.
Yeah.
And it's the same with reading difficulties. The first thing to do is find out why the child is having difficulties. And
did anyone do that with you?
No one knew about learning difficulties.
So how was it finally picked up, and how did you get on with reading and writing? And
I was lucky. I learned to read before I went to school, but I can still remember the absolute terror. In my first year at school, we all had to read a word on the board. And not only could I not read it, I didn't even know what they were talking about because I just couldn't focus on the blackboard. And they didn't realise I could read till halfway through the year. I had illegally snuck into the library at lunchtime and I was reading Black Beauty, little print, no pickies, leafing it over. And the headmistress found me. And I still remember her having this argument with my teacher over my head, wondering what was this kid who couldn't read right run, spot, run, doing
Black Beauty,
and they finally realised I actually could read it. I could tell them what the book was about. And they also discovered that I could tell stories. And in fact, if the class had behaved, I was allowed to tell a story for the last 20 minutes of every day, which in retrospect was probably very convenient for the teacher. But it meant I never was regarded as dumb. And in those days, if you were dumb, you were put in the gardening group and you picked up papers till you were old enough to leave school. But there was no idea of any learning support in those days. You were either dumb or you weren't dumb. Yes.
So how did you make your way through then? I mean, from...
Most teachers were fine. There are some teachers I still remember with actually sort of a combination of rage and terror. I'm sort of shaking my head even now.
Yeah.
But most of them, even though no one knew about learning difficulties, then most of them actually were experienced enough or just intelligent enough to realise that there was a problem. It wasn't that I wasn't trying.
Yes.
I really did actually have a problem. And that was the same at university. In fact, there was only one lecturer at university who kept on penalising me and would only give me pass concedence because of my handwriting and my spelling. All the others, well, actually a surprising number of academics, I suspect, have also got learning difficulties under appalling spellers.
Yes, you're right too. Yeah.
So, but look, as I said, I was lucky because I learnt to read before I went to school. There were so many kids, and even today, so many kids who just aren't diagnosed. They're kids who, often they're actually just passing. And so no one realises that they're actually very, very bright kids who should be getting 97 or 98. And they're bored. There's horrible, rebellious kids. They're the boys who muck up. They're the girls who giggle in the back.
Yes.
And they are very, very bright and they're bored and no one realises they've got a problem. Actually, one of the great signs that a child might have a problem is if their best friend is doing much better at school than they are. And kids are very good at making friends with their peers. And so if your child's best friend is doing far better at school, that is a real sign that your child probably has got a learning difficulty of some sort. And it may not be picked up because they're intelligent enough to just get by, to just pass, but they're very, very bored at school as well.
See, whenever I think of the word dyslexia, you think of the terminology meaning, you know, where you get your letters back to front and you see things in mirror images and that, but it's obviously more than just that.
Yes. In fact, for most people with reading difficulties, they don't put their words back the front.
Yeah.
My words often go inside out, but mostly because I can't focus on words, so I don't notice that strawberry for me, for example, when I write it down, is always starberry.
Yes.
I've never worked out how to write Australia, which is quite embarrassing, actually.
So do you, like when you write all these wonderful books that you do, do you have a computer and a spell check? Is that how you get round it now or what?
I do, but I've also got someone who corrects my spelling for me.
Okay.
And the publishers are very, very grateful because they no longer have to ring me up and say, "Got page 36, paragraph 2, what's that word?" I say, "That word's rhinoceros."
Could have fooled me.
Yes. And Angela is very, very good at deciphering my gibberish and actually turning it into intelligible English. But that also means, too, that I can write very quickly because I have got an Angela who will go through my work, who will not only correct the spelling, but put in the punctuation and things like that.
That's wonderful.
Yes.
So you would have a real, and I can sense it just talking to you today, a real empathy with kids who have learning difficulties because you've been there, done that. And I guess do you, as a result of writing for children, get to meet some of these children sometimes?
Enormously. And when I tell the story of my dyslexia to a group of kids, you can always suddenly see the kids who are bored and fidgeting at the beginning of the talk. Suddenly they sit up straight and they start staring.
Yeah.
And in every group you can say, right, you. And these kids, it is suddenly clicking that they are not dumb. Mm-hmm. And it is so easy to teach a kid that they're stupid.
Yes.
And if that happens to your child, there is nothing you can say, because your kids know that you're biased and think they're wonderful. There is no way on earth you can convince them that they are not stupid.
Yeah.
unless, of course, they get professional help, professional diagnosis. But it's probably ironic that in these days, when we do know about learning difficulties, there is literally an epidemic. And partly,
why do you think that
partly
is?
Partly that's because of TV. When kids watch television, they're not doing anything else. Now, you remember in our childhood, there were games we played. Do you remember that wall? You throw a ball against the wall with one hand, then with another hand, and then you clap in between, and then you throw it under one leg, and then another leg.
Yes.
And no one ever said, hey, kids, these are wonderful tracking and focusing and coordination exercises.
No, that's
it was just playing.
And it's what you did as a child, wasn't it?
Yeah. And all the games that kids play, not by coincidence, are really very, very good training for the skills they need as an adult. But now kids are watching television. They're not doing that. And to learn to read, or to learn to read easily, kids need to learn to focus, to coordinate, to concentrate, and to track across the page.
Yeah.
And they don't learn any of these skills when they're watching television.
What about their spacey games that they have with their computers, which might be hand-eye coordination for
But they're still actually not learning the tracking,
true,
et cetera, and the focusing and the reading across the page. Now, I'm not saying turn the TV off, because that's probably unreasonable. TV is the best babysitter there is. But we've inherited the way we watch TV from going to the pictures on Saturday afternoons, sitting there or sprawling there. Unless, of course, you're necking in the back seat, but still mostly sitting there, not doing anything. So teach your kids to do something when they watch TV. Hang a balloon from the light fitting and get them to tap it or hit it with their left hand, then with their right hand, and their right foot and their left hand. Give them a yo-yo. Give them worry beads. Give them craft to do. There's no TV, really, which actually needs to be concentrated on so much you can't do something else.
Yeah.
And if kids just get into the habit of doing things when they watch TV, it means they are picking up all their skills, and that's particularly important when they're very young, up to five.
Yeah.
And the balloon hanging above the TV set is probably one of the best things you can do for reading, for teaching reading skills. I know
it sounds interesting.
Really
I know. I know where you're coming from.
And also, too, for boys, kids learn in different ways. And a lot of boys are what's called kinetic readers. They process information more easily if they're moving. So you don't have to learn by sitting still. Give them a water pistol. Take them outside and they make their letters on the concrete.
Yeah.
Do letters in sand and they run around it. Give them worry beads so they're moving.
Yes.
But a lot of girls are social learners. In fact, my stepdaughter Elizabeth is like that. Put Liz in the middle of the Sahara Desert and within 5 minutes she'd have a network of friends stretching right across Africa. And she hated school. She just was bored stiff. And it wasn't until she went to university that she started to get HDs. And that was because at university you do tutorials, you do group projects. For Liz, something isn't real unless you share it with your friends.
Yeah.
She's a social learner. And if you think of our ancestry, the boys learnt going off with the men of the tribe. They learnt when they were physically doing things. Girls learnt being with the women and talking about things.
Yeah.
So a lot of girls are so much better at learning with other people. So if you're trying to help your daughter learn, often if you actually get your daughter to teach her teddy bear or bring the dog in so the dog is actually learning to read too, to make it a group thing so they share information.
Yeah. Well, this wonderful book that you've got out, obviously this is quite a bit of what's in here, called Rocket Your Child Into Reading, New Ideas, Great Tips, Fun Games for Reading Success. And it's got to be fun, doesn't it? The minute you make it a chore for children, you lose them, don't you? You've got them. Yeah,
and look, kids like learning. They should like learning.
Yes.
If they're not enjoying it, then there really is something wrong. Either the kid is having a difficulty, or else this is the wrong way of teaching them.
Yeah.
And there are so many different ways to learn to read.
Well, it's a beautifully set out book for mums and dads or aunties and uncles or grandparents to look at, to give them a good idea of. And is it based mainly on your experience, or did you talk to a whole lot of other people as well about this?
A whole lot of other people.
Yeah.
As a parent, as an aunt, as I said, dyslexia often runs very strongly in families.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a matter of just researching and researching to just.
But this is not just for dyslexia, is it?
Oh, no,
this is
no.
just getting kids into reading.
Just getting kids reading.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, you did say about that being an hereditary thing, because you think that there's been dyslexia in your family. Your son's dyslexic?
My son's dyslexic.
Yeah.
Two of my nieces are. My nephew is. My mother is. My grandfather was. And he was also a brain surgeon. So I often have an image of actually the nurse saying, no, no, doctor, sort of cut on the left, doctor. So, yes, it does.
So
it does
run in families.
Very,
which
very
is
strongly.
Something worth knowing, isn't it?
Yes. And in our family, you can often tell it by the ones who do speak very, very quickly and have to learn to really slow down. Yeah. When they talk.
Well, let's talk about your other book that you've got in here today. And I want to talk about where you live, because that's wonderful. But it'll all tie in a minute. Now, you've got the book for adults here called Rocket Your Child Into Reading. But you've also just brought out a beautiful book called Pete the Sheep. Now,
yes.
Tell us, this is a book for children.
It is.
And tell us what it's about, what age group, and a little bit about the background to this.
From 3 and upwards. And it's about doing things a little differently. And it is about every other sheep. Every other shearer has a sheepdog, but Sean has a sheep.
A sheep.
And when none of the other shearers will work with them, they decide to open a hairdressing salon for sheep. And then the book really goes on from there, and it's more and more and more wacky and ludicrous. And the kids love it because it's got lots of animals and dogs and animal noises and woof, 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 woof,
and they love that. And littlies love that, don't they? Which brings me to your one called Diary of a Wombat, which has become an international bestseller. Tell us about that one, because that, again, has lots of wonderful things about animals.
That's based on the true story of one very, very stroppy wombat who actually lives underneath our bedroom. And that was a total shock. The standard thing is that books on Australian animals do not do well overseas because no one knows what they are.
Yes.
And HarperCollins in America wouldn't even take it. They take my other books, they take Bruce's other books, but they wouldn't take this one. So another publishing house picked it up, printed 1,000 copies, and then even before it was released, had to do another, I think, 3 reprintings even before it was released. It won Best Picture Book and Funniest Book over there last year.
In the States.
It's gone absolutely bananas. It is being picked up right across the world. I think it has sold more copies in its first year than any other Australian children's book. And it has been this absolute total shock.
Why do you think? Do you know why, or can you wonder why it might have been so successful with American kids?
I think possibly because a wombat, they've assumed a wombat is a small Australian bear.
Right.
So I think possibly for that reason.
Yeah.
It's very difficult. Look, I'm bananas about wombats. Let's face it. I mean, yes.
You've got lots of... We're going to talk about your wombats in a moment.
Yes. So, look, I'm really biased. I mean, I think wombats are the most fascinating animal in the universe.
Yes.
And so, of course, for me, any book about wombats is fascinating. But why Diary of a Wombat has actually been so popular so widely, I'm really not... Yeah. Quite sure. For me, it's fascinating. I still adore the book every time I read it.
Well, I just got a quick glance of it today, but basically it's the diary that this wombat keeps of what life's like, which is rather boring, really.
It is. Yeah. She eats. She scratches. She does a lot of scratching. And she is also training humans to be better pets.
Oh, yes.
So she trains her humans to actually feed her carrots and rolled oats, and if they don't do it, she bashes the garbage bin, tears up the doormat, or chews holes through the door.
Which the kids, of course, would think was fantastic.
Yes, yes.
Which, of course, is all based, as you say, on real life, which brings us to you and where you live and where your wombats are. Now, tell us about where you get all these great stories from. Where do you live?
I live in the Aragoon Valley in rural New South Wales, on the edge of the Dewar Wilderness area, in a very, very deep valley. And it is wombat paradise. We've probably got more wombats to the acre than anywhere else in the world. And there are wombats everywhere, including a very large wombat hole underneath our bedroom where Mothball lives. And Mothball is a very stroppy wombat. She was discovered in Canberra. She'd been badly mauled by dogs. She was rescued, taken to the vet. But she wouldn't eat when she was sewn up, so the vet gave her a course of testosterone.
Okay.
And if you have ever seen an athlete with roid rage, you ain't seen anything till you've actually seen a wombat with too much testosterone. No wombat is exactly patient, but Mothball,
She's stroppy. She's pretty stroppy. If you don't feed her within 5 seconds, she will start destroying things. And I really mean absolutely, totally destroying the universe and anything which even smells of humans. I know in the drought, she blamed us for the drought. She was hot, she was hungry, and it was all our fault.
All your fault.
And about 2 o'clock in the morning sometimes I'd wake up waiting for the noise of her attacking the car. I mean, it never happened.
She was hungry. So they decided to give her to you, did they?
Word
get out that Jackie French was a sucker for wombats and she'd take
her. I'd been a wombat halfway house for quite a long time.
All right.
With just teaching wombats to go back to the bush.
Yes.
But most of those, within about anywhere 3 weeks to 18 months, they'll sort of trundle off into the bush and you won't see them again. But Mothball has stayed. And not only has Mothball stayed, she now actually has a mob of followers. And she has taught them that at 5:30 every afternoon, the carrots will be put out there, the rolled oats will be put out there. If they're not put out there, all the other wombats wait while Mothball actually goes and attacks the back door until the food comes. And she's pretty much boss of the valley, Mothball wombat.
What's the fascination with wombats have with carrots and rolled oats? I mean, what do they normally eat in the wild?
Mostly grass, but they do eat other roots as well.
Ah, okay.
And I don't know about rolled oats. I suppose like grass seeds. But if you put rolled oats out, we'll have wombats coming for about the next 2 hours who smelt them. Wombats see the world by what they smell.
Yes.
And they do seem to be able to smell rolled oats literally half a kilometre away.
And so they'll just hone in on that.
Yes.
And these are uncooked rolled oats. They're not like porridge in a plate. This is just dry
rolled
oats.
No, this is just dried rolled oats.
And carrots.
And wombat nuts.
Okay.
Wombat nuts are compressed loosen and grains and oats and things like that too. But just the rolled oats are pretty good if you're a wombat.
Now, I know that you don't only share your house with, of course, your lovely partner and the wombats. You've got a whole heap of other creatures that live with you there too. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, what you've got where you live there?
We've got three possibly insane lyrebirds, one of which keeps seeing his reflection in our living room windows, which looks like an attack lyrebird. So he will spend 2 hours a day doing wonderful male threat behaviour and watching
in front of your window.
Yes, and with very, very long streaks of white droppings too.
Oh, lovely.
Yes, so we've got that. We've got bush rats, we've got wallabies, we've got kangaroos, we've got possums, we've got echidnas, we've got 8 different sorts of snakes, which is not always an unadulterated joy, that one.
How do you get around that? Because that must be quite tricky, is it? Because you've got such a lovely place there and you're in and out of the garden all the time. Do you always have to just keep your eyes about you in case there's something in the long grass?
Wear boots in summer.
Yes.
And we've got paving around the house, and the point about paving is you can see the snakes.
Right.
And also too, the snakes sense the vibration. So if you're walking on the paving, yes, that they usually get out of the way.
Have you ever had one come inside?
Oh yes, yes. Yes, not since the house was finished, but I remember I was 9 months pregnant and I was on the phone to my mum and I looked down and there was a red-bellied black snake actually just tonguing my foot.
Ooh.
And I thought, help, help, and I rang up my dear friend Angela, who's also 9 months pregnant, and by sheer coincidence, she had just been on the phone to her mum and had just looked down, and there was a red-bellied black snake. It was in a drought, and it was just before an incredible storm,
yes.
And I think the snakes were probably looking for shelter, so it probably wasn't all that much of a coincidence.
No.
But there's been no snake indoors that time, which is not a bad thing.
It's not indeed. Well, look, it's been absolutely super to catch up with you today and to hear about all your wonderful books. You've got a website too, JackieFrench.com, right?
Yes.
Just quickly?
Yes.
So people can tune in, check out that, and you'll get lots of information. But look for the name Jackie French. Children's books like Pete the Sheep, Diary of a Wombat, and this new book, which is wonderful, Rocket Your Child into Reading. There are lots of great books on growing things in your garden, companion planting, organic gardening. Just look for the name Jackie French. That's all I can say, because there are over 120 different books and every one of them is a gem. And it's been a delight to catch up with you again, Jackie. And safe journey home, and we'll look forward to you coming back real soon.
Yummy. Thanks, Alice.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.